special tribute tonight, I can tell you, because yesterday, back in Dingle, or in Valencia, one of, I say this carefully, one of the greatest Kerry supporters of all time was laid to rest. Bernie O'Connell, in his 80s, had been following Kerry football all his life, was laid to rest yesterday. When the coffin was lowered into grave, Christy O'Connell, the South Kerry chairman, gave a fabulous oration, lovely oration, and I know Bernie would have been delighted to see Mick Dwyer there, Mick O'Connell, and Jerry Savage was there from the supporters club. But a few years ago, I caught up with Bernie, we were good friends, and he wrote down his memories for me, and we came up together one time, and in a fabulous look back, he, as you can hear from what we're going to hear, he was reading out of his memories. So sit back now and listen to the late Bernie O'Connell bringing us back through the years, telling us stories, how difficult and how hard it was, the late Bernie O'Connell.
My personal involvement with the GA goes back to a good number of years. I was Secretary of Valencia Young Islanders in 1935 when the club won the South Kerry Senior Championship. We had a very good side that included men who played junior and senior, however briefly, with Kerry. I refer to Johnny Hopper Murphy, Charlie Cochran and Bernard Camden, are now deceased. The following year the club split and I was instrumental in forming a new club which drew mainly from the western side of the island. For want of a name, I christened the new club the Holy Terrors and the name stuck. You see, this club folded after years. The upsurge of interest in football during in the 1940s was largely due to the pressure of detachment of Irish Army personnel who were based in the local cable station. Every Sunday during the summer, a game would be held in the local field between the soldiers and the civvies, as they were called. Relations between both factions were never great, for reasons that had nothing to do with football. There were occasional bouts of fisticuffs in the local pub and in the parish hall, and much of the feuding had something to do with women, it is said. Anyway, the football rivalry was intense, and it was those games on Sunday afternoons that brought out the Valencia team of that period. Money was scarce, if not non-existent, and immigration was in full speed. Very few players enjoyed the luxury of owning their own football boots, and the club tried to help out where possible. I can recall half a dozen pairs of football boots being bought on one occasion, and these were shared out between the players in as far as they would go. Thus a player who kicked with the right was given appropriate footwear, while a kithog who favoured the left leg would be assigned to a left boot. I always had a passionate interest in football and got to know some of the stars of Kerry football of that era. I could number among my friends such as the late, great John Joe Sheehy, Joe Cahan, Bill Kinnett, Brody O'Donnell, Teddy Lyon, and many others. John Joe Sheehy, God rest him, was a particularly close friend. You see, this was the era of the great Dingle team, and there were other very good teams scattered throughout the county, notably Killarney Legion, Dick Fitzgerald's, Shannon Rangers, and Sully John Mitchell's, not forgetting Ken's O'Reilly's and The Rock, remains an abiding memory. The Dingle side were my personal favourites, and I reckon this side that was backbone by men like Paddy Van Braston, his brother Tim Nindash, Greg O'Connor, Bill Dillon, Bill Casey, Sean Brassman. The football in those days was much more open than today's, far more enjoyable to watch, seeing our midfielders contest, breaking the ball independently at midfield without any hint of deliberately breaking the ball was a joy to behold. In those days, no footballer worth his salt would countenance the deliberate spoiling of an opponent. Not having any transport, I travelled to many county championship games on a rickety bicycle, usually borrowed from a neighbour because I didn't own one myself. The compense was usually extracted by way of a day in the bog, a saving here, the only bodily substance partaken of on those journeys by bicycles from Renard Pine to Tralee or Killarney was a bottle of lemonade and a couple of penny buns. I didn't have the money for steak and onion, and in fact in those years I didn't know what it was. Getting ready for those journeys was part of the excitement of the occasion. It was important to have the chain well oiled, and if you had half a crown in your pocket you were lucky. The longest journey by bicycle I ever attempted was in February in 1949, when I cycled from Renard Pine to Turles, a distance of, I think it's roughly 140 miles. I recall the game to see Cork play Tipperary in the National Hurling League. I recall the game very clearly, and it was notable for the effective marking job performed by Tommy Purcell and Christy Ring. I broke the journey by staying overnight in Clonmel and cycled to Turles on the following day. Luckily, the weather wasn't too bad because I had no rain wear of any account. The ghost train was passed for my pilgrimage. Well, Kerry usually contested the All-Ireland finals in those years, so you could say it was an annual event. The night train from Kerry started after crows broke down the gates at Crowcock prior to the 1937 drawn final between Kerry and Cavan. This happened because of the late arrival of Kerry supporters, and the railway authorities decided to put on the night train for the replay. This became known as the ghost train. Conditions were primitive. Needless to mention, there were no dining facilities, and passengers had to make their own arrangements. The usual sustenance was a bottle of cold tea and a few sandwiches. Playing cards helped while away the night, and occasionally somebody might bring a melodeon or a mouth organ for musical entertainment. The ghost train started from Renard Pine usually at about 9:30 p.m. and reached Kingsley Station around 6 or 6:30 a.m. on Sunday morning. A journey of about 8 or 9 hours, which wasn't bad going at a time when trains were driven by turf and coal. For, as sometimes happened, turf on its own. On arrival in Dublin, the first party was to attend mass, to be followed by breakfast and a few drinks. Stand tickets were not part of our priorities because they were mostly unavailable. Instead, we queued up early for admission to the sideline, feeling that you had to be satisfied with standing on the terrace of Hill 16. I travelled by ghost train to the 1946 All-Ireland final replay between Kerry and Roscommon, which was one of the greatest games I ever saw. Roscommon had a great side backbone by Jimmy and Fiala Murray, Bill Carless, Deco Kellen, Donald Keenan, Frankie Kinlock, Jack McQuillan and Ormsey Hoare. Kerry had an equally fine side with such immortals of the game as Dan O'Keefe, the Lyon brothers, Jackie and Ginny, Dan Kavanagh, Bill Casey, Eddie Welsh, Frank O'Keefe, Paddy Kennedy and Paddy Van Brosnan. After the fine whistle, I rushed onto the pitch and had the honour of shouldering Paddy Kennedy off the field with the Sam Maguire Cup. There is a video in the archives which shows such an incident clearly. Getting back to Valencia by ghost train was another marathon, but time passed quickly, especially if Kerry won. You usually had a ferry laid on at Renard Pine to meet the arrivals 4 hours at about 3 a.m. If the weather was bad, it would mean a wait of 4 hours in the coal shed until the morning ferry arrived, assuming the weather calm. The late Ger Lynch, father of Gerard, who won 3 All-Irelands with Kerry, was a seasoned ghost train man and used to recall sheltering in the hay shed and then walking home 3 miles in pouring rain. Up to 50 passengers would leave Valencia crossing by boat on these occasions. One of them, the late Tommy Smith, fell into the sea before being dragged out dripping wet. Instead of feeling sorry for himself, he shouted, "Up, Kerry!" Before being prevailed upon to go home and change his clothes. He didn't see the All-Ireland that year. bringing drink onto the train was part of the tradition. On one occasion, a party of Caswean men, which included Thrush Clifford, Taylor Sullivan, Jack the Reeler, and Bob Dyle, brought their own porter stored in a petrol tin. They had washed the tin thoroughly and even scalded it with hot water, but in their hurry, they forgot to wash the cap. Apparently, the foul taste of petrol was a serious deterrent, but that didn't stop them from finishing the drink down to the very last drop. On another occasion, Jack Sullivan, the bellman of Caswean, known as Jackie and Jane, didn't have the price of the fare, and he spent the night ducking from one carriage to another. Eventually, he was caught, hauled up in the lavatory, when an officious railwayman came pounding on the door and threatened to call the police. However, the Caswean men, the train held for the most part. The ghost train journeys were very orderly. There were never any rows or unpleasantness. It was a hush into the world of travel, but it didn't do us any harm. I was chairman of South Kerry Board for a period of 2 years, 1964-1962, and usually made it my business to call to the individual players seeking their fullest commitment. These trips were made by bicycle again, as I didn't own a car. I was instrumental in getting John Burke, a great player of the period, to declare for South Kerry, and the great asset he proved himself to be. We had Mick O'Connell, Mick O'Dwyer, Dasher O'Connell, Pat Tommy O'Sullivan, Frank O'Leary, and others on call. So we had a very good side, and in fact it was South Kerry that stopped the great Mitchell side from Tralee when they were building for an all-time record of 6 consecutive county titles. Unfortunately, we were subsequently beat by Shannon Rangers in the county semi-final. We were under strength. My job as a maintenance operative with Irish Lights, which saw me stationed on remote lighthouses around the coast, finally dictated that I would have to relinquish my post. One amusing incident from that era stands out. Renard and Wadwell were playing in Concating Park when the referee Dick Cassell saw fit to send up a Renard player who attacked him physically and a right developed. Eventually, order was restored and I had the unpleasant task of suspending the man involved for 12 months. I always refer to that day as South Kerry's Bloody Sunday. Later, it was stated in the press that I stood with my hands in my pockets while the referee was being attacked. This was totally untrue, and our subsequent press report then the Kerryman stated that I am quoting verbatim. Mr. O'Connell, denying the allegation, said he did his utmost to quell the riot. I have not only the happiest memories of my involvement with football. The friends I have made have remained true friends ever since. Nowadays, I travel with the Kerry Supporters Club to matches around the country, which usually involves a 3-day outing and an overnight stay on the return journey. I envy people from Tralee and Killarney who can be at their beds at 11 p.m. on Sunday night, meeting those Tralee men in Houston Station. I said they had a big box. I said, for the crack, what have you got in the box, lads? That's a hen, they said. A hen. Paddy Fitzmaurice. He worked in Clifford's in Tralee for years. And a company was Sean Colgan and Mick Elligott. I think it was Kevin Mick Elligott. And they gave the hen a drop of the crater before the game and let the hen loose into Croke Park at half time. Yes, sir, geez, it was a crack and a half. Huh? Green and gold colours, that's right. And Paddy Fitzmaurice told me it was a hen he stole from his aunt. Yeah. You see?
Oh, what a lovely way to go out with that chuckle of the late Bernie O'Connell. With some lovely stories there, bringing us back through the years. Wonderful, wonderful stuff. A lovely man who became a great friend of everybody in Kerry. He made the sad rest lightly on him. And lovely man, Eamon.
Yeah, and certainly president of the South Kerry board. Great involvement in the GA, and as I said, sympathy to all his family and to the South Kerry board and village clubs.
Bernie O'Connell made a sad rest lightly on your old friend.